We're taking a look at indoor air quality issues and your health next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and I'm really happy to have with us by phone Dean Johnson. Dean is host and executive producer of the PBS Home Improvement Show, Home Time. He's a recognized home improvement expert. The show is, I believe, in its 20th year, airs on public television stations in the Fox Valley, Eau Claire, La Crosse, Wausau, and Madison on Sunday afternoons at 4:30, airs on Milwaukee's WMVT Channel 36 Saturday afternoons at 4 p.m., and again Wednesday afternoons at 4 p.m. So really pleased to have Dean Johnson with us, and certainly if you have questions about your home and the indoor air quality of it, what you might be able to do to improve it, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And Dean Johnson, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you this morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us today. Really appreciate it. After all these, that's a long time to be producing, hosting and producing a program.
I'll tell you, the time flies by so fast, it's hard to believe it's been 20 years, but it's been a lot of fun. It's an interesting process, marrying the television with the home improvement stuff, and we still, I don't think, have quite got it right, but we're bound and determined to figure it out one of these days.
Oh, you do a great job. I enjoy watching the show. I tell you, indoor air quality, I think for a lot of people, I'm not sure they fully understand that there can be some real serious air quality issues in the home.
Well, actually, we were tracking a survey that was done with a little over 1,000 homeowners 18 years and older across the country, and that survey showed that 38% of the people interviewed thought that their indoor air quality was the air inside the home was cleaner than the air outside, and the EPA will strongly disagree with that, saying that, you know, depending on the house, depending on the mix of things going on, sometimes the interior of your home can be as polluted as some of the more industrial cities in the country.
Yeah. What are typically, if you take off two or three of the more common problems that can occur?
Well, first of all, mold and mildew. I think a lot of people are, you know, today familiar with the fact that, you know, some of the mold and mildew problems that are going on. You know, Wisconsin, we're located in Minnesota, but, you know, everybody's got a basement, and depending on how old that basement is and how well it's been protected from moisture on the outside, it's very difficult to not have a little bit of mold and mildew going down there, some of those spores being released into the air. And depending on, you know, if you have any water trapped in some of your wall sheathing or something, that will give off a little bit of mold and mildew. So that's one thing that gets thrown in the mix. Also, you have off-gassing of building products, VOCs, volatile organic compounds, coming off things like flooring and carpentry. If you've ever walked into a new home and it just smells like a new house, well, that's off-gassing. You know, molecules are coming off the carpet, and that's what you're smelling. And you get too much of that in the air, and that can be a little noxious, you know, to a certain extent. And then also you have formaldehyde in some of the building products. For instance, in insulation, you'll get off-gassing from that, especially in these warm summer months. You close up the house, if it's nice and tight, the warm temperatures tend to break down that formaldehyde a little bit more. Those molecules get released, and that gets mixed into the home, as well as your heating and cooling system. If it hasn't been cleaned, it could be circulating dust mites, and cleaning products with a lot of ammonia or chlorine. You throw that into it, and you can get a pretty robust aroma and stuff going on. So if you have itchy eyes, ears, or throat, it's no wonder that sometimes that's going on. And that's not to say, you know, and that's not even mentioning radon, which, again, can be, you know, something else that's happening.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? Every one of our lines is filled, so we better take some calls here. And let's see. Let's go to Ian first in Hudson. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hey, Dean. Say
hi.
It's ironic and convenient that you have this topic on today. Okay. I'm in the middle of what has become a massive home improvement project. And true to form, it's increased in scope and size throughout the duration here.
Yeah.
So it began simply as an insulating project. I've got an old, about 100-year-old farm home. And what I did was I took the exterior sheathing off the home to gain access and ended up doing isonine, sprayed foam insulation. But what that does then, obviously, is seals up the building envelope enough that now I've got indoor air quality issues I need to worry about. So I've got an HRV unit that I'm going to be installing, and one of the things that I did while I had the sheathing off the exterior of the home was run ductwork on the second floor in the bedrooms. Initially, we had only electric baseboard, so I've got heat supplies and heat returns in the bedroom. So, and I'm trying to paint a picture here verbally, which sometimes is harder than drawing it. But
that is one interesting thing about calling radio shows is sometimes you try to get this mental picture going as the caller describes it. But I think I'm with you so far.
Okay. And with this HRV unit, there's three basic methods of installation. The one being the dedicated method, which I don't have the rough-ins for or the ductwork for. Far end of the other end of the spectrum, the simplified unit, the return air method, I'm not real fond of, where you draw your stale air out and dump your fresh air in about 4 feet away from each other, all into the return air ductwork.
Right.
Not real fond of that, simply because you either have to interlock or continuously run your furnace blower fan. So the kind of the happy medium in between is to have a dedicated stale air intake and then dump your fresh air into the return.
Right.
Which doesn't necessarily, to my understanding, have to have the furnace fan continuously running, because you've got a pressure differential there anyhow.
But obviously it works a whole lot better if the furnace is running and you're able to distribute that through the house.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously a lot of this stuff is common sense. You know, you hook it up, you try it that way. If it seems to be working, if you're happy with what seems to be going on in the house, you're in good shape. Otherwise, you run the fan on the furnace. And you know, my understanding is they don't take that much electricity to be cycling air through the house at a low level. Do you have a variable fan on the furnace, do you know?
It is not a variable fan. It's a single speed fan. The fan on the HRV unit is, I believe, about an 80 watt fan, whereas we're looking at about a 5 amp motor on the furnace blower. So it's a significant difference between the two.
Yeah.
You're looking at $10 to $15 a month to run that furnace fan continuously. I plan to run the HRV, you know, on low speed continuously.
Yeah.
It's a significant amount, you know, of energy consumption that I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what do you think, Dean?
Well, you know, one question I would ask is, how old is the furnace? You know, it might be a good time to update your whole heating plan, especially, you know, when you're looking at if this is a problem for you and you don't like what's happening with the indoor air quality, this might be a good time to just work the whole solution. The problem whenever you remodel a home is, I remember Steve Thomas on This Old House would call it the while you're at it.
Yeah.
You know, you start working on one part, and then it leads to the next. What you hate to do is throw good money after bad. In other words, put in something that really is going to be obsolete or not going to work as effectively when you finally move on to the next thing. And so sometimes the smart move is to bite off a little bit more than you planned on chewing, and maybe make the move toward a good integral system, so you have a nice effect in terms of, you know, get the new furnace, balance it off with a good air conditioner, and then hook up the HRV to that, and you've got you spent more dollars than you wanted to, but you really got a system that's going to last a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I was mentioning this survey before. We were looking at one part of that survey showed that, especially in Wisconsin, over 70% of the people, when they go out to look for a new home, will look for air quality features. Now, when you put in a new furnace and an HRV, and you go to sell your house someday, that's something you could do a little sell sheet on that. And if somebody's, you know, kind of maybe looking at your house, maybe another one,
yep,
the air quality issues just might be enough to swing them over to your place.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Dean. Appreciate your call. Martha in Muscadet is up next. Let's go to Martha. Hi, Martha.
Hi, Larry and Dean. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And my apologies, I didn't hear the entire part of that first caller, and maybe it's related to this. We're actually in the process of planning for building a new home, and our intention is that our primary heat source for the winter is going to be an indoor wood stove. But we really do have concerns about both humidifying the house and about filtering air for air quality purposes. We'll certainly have to have a propane furnace for backup. And I'm not sure what our options are in terms of either as a part of the furnace or as some sort of an add-on, that we could run some sort of an air filtration and humidifying system while heating with the wood stove?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, we've never dealt with a wood stove on the show, you know, even as an ancillary heating device. Now, the one thing that you mentioned is you will be installing a backup propane furnace,
right,
which is good because you have your solution right there. If a wood furnace is not, if your wood stove is not going to be working for you either from a humidification standpoint or you don't feel you're getting fresh air, or the other thing is sometimes, you know, burning wood in a home can be part of the problem of indoor air quality if it isn't vented properly or doesn't seem to be operating at peak efficiency. Mm-hmm. So you'll want to be monitoring that as you're going. But one thing that that you'll be able to do is because you already have the furnace installed, you have your fix already there. Now, hopefully you will be installing a heat recovery ventilator that you can hook into that furnace. So at some point in time, if you feel, boy, the air is getting a little thick in here, you know, my nose is itching or whatever, you turn on your furnace, you turn on the HV or the heat recovery ventilator, and you get all that work, and you let the wood stove sit. Or maybe use the wood stove to as an ancillary heat when the temperature really gets cold and you don't want to be pumping all that propane through your furnace and heating that way. But, you know, the key now is you're building a new house. There's some things that, you know, I would definitely be looking for. And that is, first of all, you know, going back to some of the problems you can run into, like a lot of building products emitting VOCs. You can spec low VOC carpet. You can put in paints with no VOCs at all. So that's something I might want to look into. Mm-hmm. Avoid formaldehyde products. So you can get fiberglass. I know Johns Manville makes a fiberglass insulator. We like using fiberglass. It's good R rating. Mm-hmm. They make a fiberglass now without formaldehyde. So that's a good thing to work into the whole mix. And then to avoid any type of mold problems when you put in the – have you put the foundation in yet?
No, we have not.
Okay, when you put in the foundation, make sure you're putting a really good protection around the foundation itself before you do any backfilling, because that's going to go a long way to you know, letting moisture get in, and that's where you get a lot of your mildew and mold and stuff today, is just the moisture that gets in the you know, the masonry product in the foundation. And underneath the floor in the basement, you want to put in a good 6 to 8, maybe even 12 inches of big rock. Big rock, because one is you can use that to collect any water that gets in and suck it out with a sump pump, or if you end up with radon problems next to the furnace or somewhere, just have an area where a pipe comes out, because that pipe then can just pull air, you know, in and around those rocks underneath your foundation. And if you do end up, let's say, a higher radon reading down the road, you can just put a little fan onto that, vent it out the roof, and you already have your radon fix taken care of. Cover all that rock underneath your foundation with a good thick piece of plastic, and you're going to be a long way in you know, solving any future problems. Get mold-resistant products. You can get pressed board stuff. You can get studs. You can get drywall now that will totally resist mold. It does not let mold or mildew grow in the building products, and you should be in pretty good shape. So.
Yeah.
Just, you know, attend to those things now. Think about them now, and you won't be on a radio show down the road going, boy, you know, I got a couple of problems with air quality. What do I do about it?
Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
1 second to see if I understood part of the first part of the answer.
All right.
Sure.
When you talk about this HRV, and I sort of understand this, but this is something that will only work if the furnace is running. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know if you heard the caller before, but
that's,
like he said, there's three methods.
That's why I'm apologizing. I missed
it.
Part of that, and then I heard the tail end, and I thought, boy, I should have heard all of this.
Yeah, you know, the best way to run an HRV is you hook it into your furnace, and so when your furnace runs, what an HRV does, the basic machine, it takes air from the outside, fresh air from the outside, and then it expels indoor air, you know, your stale air, it expels that outside. And in the process of doing that, there's a little mixing chamber where it grabs the ambient temperatures of that outside air that you're throwing outside,
okay,
and it mixes it in with the incoming air. So it's energy efficient. You save the heating that you've already built up in the house, or you save the cooling that you've built up,
right,
and you impart that back in the fresh air.
Okay.
Now, the best way to do that is you hook that up to your furnace. So as your furnace is circulating, it sends that fresh air throughout the entire home. The worst way to do it is to have it, you know, you cut a hole in the wall, you put your HRV in, and you have it dump into a room, and right next to it is the exhaust. Well, all it's doing is, as fast as it dumps it into the room, it's exhausting it pretty much. And then the middle road is you try to, you know, set the intake close to the furnace and set the, you know, the exhaust as far away from that as possible. But, I mean, you shouldn't be doing that. You're building a new house. You're setting it up for the first time. You want to hook that HRV system into the furnace.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a good heating contractor will tell you exactly, you know, how to size it and how to go about doing it. And mm-hmm. So it's really something you want to build into your home.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Dean Johnson, host of the PBS Home Improvement Show, Home Time, as we talk with him about indoor air quality and your health. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Dean Johnson, host of the Home Time PBS Home Improvement Show. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Will in Eau Claire next.
Okay, here we go.
Will, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, guys. After hearing all this stuff, I think I want to move into a tent or someplace like that.
Quick question. You don't have to do
relating
that.
To the effectiveness or the, desirability of these, we'll come on over and clean your ductwork, and it'll be safer for you and your family services. I've heard conflicting information. Some people have said, well, yeah, that's a good idea. It'll clean everything out, and that's the pitch that you get from people who offer that. And other people have said, no, it really doesn't make any difference. So I just was curious what you thought about that. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
All right. Sure. Thanks a lot.
Well, just speaking from a personal level, we do ours every, I want to probably say 4 or 5 years. Now, I don't know what the recommended, level is or whatever, but one thing we'll notice, my wife particularly, is that, you know, dust builds up on furniture a little bit faster, when the ducts are dirty. And especially if you've done any projects or anything like that, you know, the ductwork really gets loaded up. You know, if you're sawing anything or doing any type of remodeling in the house, when those guys come in, again, if you get a good reputable service, they have scrubbers and vacuums that go pretty deep into the ductwork. And if you're seeing, you know, a bit of dust showing up on your furniture relatively quickly after you clean it, you go in, you get the ductwork cleaned out, and you'll notice a huge difference in terms of you just don't see that dust layer showing up anytime soon. So from a personal standpoint, we've used them many times, and we totally recommend it. When we get done with a remodel project at a house, we always encourage the people to go out and have that done. And we've featured it on the show a couple times just to, you know, kind of give people a little mm-hmm. heads up on it. So, I recommend it. It's I think we, in our area, we spend about $150 to get it done, so it isn't anything that's incredibly expensive. So I think I recommend it in terms of, you know, how effective it is to totally ridding, you know, all your problems here. It's only part of the cure, as I mentioned, because you have all these other things going on. It's not going to do anything about mold or mildew. It's not going to help the off-gassing of the carpet. But it will take care of the dust mites and knock down some of the things, rolling through the air around the house.
All right. Thanks again for calling. Let's go to Steve in Stevens Point next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
A few years back, my wife and I bought a house. I estimated it being around 100 years old. We replaced the windows, the doors. We put an insulation product called P2000. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
Oh, that's a new one on me.
Okay. It was new to us, too, but we were sold. So it's essentially tin foil and extruded polystyrene, and you tape the seam, so it acts as a vapor barrier also.
Mm-hmm.
My concern with all of this, the new windows, the new doors, and the new insulation, is that we might have sealed it too good. And I'm a little concerned about our air quality. It in the wintertime, it just gets stuffy.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure what we can do with the house to relieve some of that.
And did you put in a heat recovery ventilator?
No, we haven't done anything with the ventilation or the heating system. That's all original. We have the two huge grates in the floor in the basement, so it's all gravity fed.
Okay.
Or not the basement, the floor. But
so, and it's a oil furnace or?
It's a natural gas furnace.
Natural gas furnace. Okay.
Yep.
Dean, what
so you don't have a system of ductwork then running around your house anywhere?
We have very basic. They're probably 12x12 boxes in the walls,
mm-hmm.
With the grates over the front of them. We have
okay.
Two upstairs in each of the bedrooms. It's only a two-bedroom home, And then we have a few.
But you do have ductwork running to a few of the homes in the house. So if you would get a heat recovery ventilator and hook it up to that system, again, a good qualified heating contractor would going to tell you a whole lot more than I will on this. But, you know, it sounds like you have the basics for a system that would distribute fresh air through the home. And if you would get, you know, a good-sized heat recovery ventilator, size it to, you know, what you're doing in the house there, I think you're going to be miles ahead. You know, one thing people should not be I mean, there's debates going on in the building industry. I mean, how tight should we make, how tight should we build homes? You know, Europe really looks at building houses as you should put more a sweater around a house as opposed to, you know, something that's really tight and totally sealed up. You know, America's taking the, you know, the we're going to really seal things up tight, put vapor barriers on stuff. And it certainly it works in homes when it's done properly. But part of that process includes introducing fresh air, and you do that with a heat recovery ventilator. Otherwise, yeah, you are going to have a lot of stale air in the house, and the fact that you are feeling that stale air is probably a credit to the fact that you guys probably did a very good job doing the building that you did do. Your energy bills are probably going to be, you know, very good, and, you know, if you make certain that you just don't have moisture, you know, getting into those areas from rainwater or, you know, water draining off or anything like that, with a heat recovery ventilator, you should be in pretty good shape.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Ross in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Ross.
Hi. my wife and I were looking to buy a home a couple of years ago in Madison here, and it was an older home, 20 or maybe 25 years old, and as part of our cursory walk through the home, we thought we smelled some mildew in the basement. So before actually deciding to buy, we made a contingent upon having it inspected by a mold inspector, and that's where our troubles began. The inspector came in, and instead of going straight to the basement, sort of did the whole house, did this whole kind of inspection of everything, and had a lot of talk. He seemed very knowledgeable, and I'm not a contractor, and I notice a lot of people calling in seem to sort of specifically know kind of what they are doing and what they want, but a lot of us out here in the public don't have specific knowledge about building and contracting and such. So nevertheless, the guy did his work. It was a couple hundred dollars for his inspection. I thought, well, and he basically said, you know, at the end of the inspection, he went to the basement and said, you have mold. My wife and I looked at each other and said, well, it's too bad. It's a done deal. We didn't want to deal with the mold problem, and so we left. That was stopped. Didn't buy the house. Paid the guy $200 or you know, was going to pay him $200. He sent me a bill for $700.
$200 oh, you're kidding.
For the inspection, $500 for the paperwork. We took him to court, or actually he took us to court because we wouldn't pay him. The court found on his side, because bottom line was that when I signed the contract, I basically allowed him to do whatever he wanted to. And here's my bottom line is that the state of Wisconsin does not regulate indoor inspectors or mold inspectors. So these guys can come in, talk to people who might be relatively intelligent but not knowing about the subject, and they can talk your ear off, and you think, wow, these people are not inspected. They'll tell you whatever you want to hear, and the bottom line is they're not regulated. There is no standard for mold inspectors. There is for home inspectors. There's a bottom line. If they come in, they inspect your home, they're required to give you a report, not a mold inspector. There's mold inspectors that can come in, and they'll just kind of do it by the sniff test, and they look, and they tap, and they sort of check water. There's other guys that will come in, and they put these little kind of like a vacuum system, and they set it up, and they walk away, come back 4 hours later, take the filter, send it to some lab, and they're going to, bottom line is they're going to tell you you have mold. And I guess the concern is that I think there's a big fear about mold, and maybe it's justified.
Well, you know, and here's kind of our point of view on the thing. You know, there are some very serious mold and mildew problems in some homes, but it's like so many things that, you know, I think once it hits the media, it becomes like this, it can like multiply 5-6 times what it normally is. We've worked on a lot of homes where we've run into problems where there's been rot, where you know, water gets inside, and you know, there's a little bit of mildew damage and stuff, and you know, where this can be, you know, very widespread in the home. A lot of instances, you know, you go and you deal with it, you replace some studs, you make sure that the reason why the water got in there is corrected, and you move on, and it's not the end of the world. And so I think, you know, people really have to just kind of calm down a little bit and take a look at what the situation is they're looking at. And, you know, bottom line, you know, a lot of older homes, If they, you know, were built before we were using a lot of waterproofing around basements and stuff, they probably are going to have a certain amount of mildew and mold in the basement. And there's not much you can do about that other than, you know, digging out the side of the foundation and, you know, waterproofing it. And I've seen it done. You know, I mean, people will go to that extent, but it's an incredible amount of work. You can also do things like dehumidifiers, which, you know, knocks it down quite a bit. If part of the mold and mildew is from groundwater, you know, you can, you know, cut around the outside of the foundation and put in drain pipes and a good sump pump and, you know, get a lot of the water out of there that way. But you really do have to look at this stuff with a little bit of common sense and maybe lean on a brother-in-law or somebody like that that maybe knows a little bit more about building than you do and you know, take more of a balanced opinion on it. You know, one of our frustrations always is when, you know, we built homes before or, you know, you sell a used house or whatever. Somebody brings in a house inspector, and don't get me wrong, there's a lot of ASHI is an organization that, you know, these guys will sign up with, and for the most part, I think those are pretty good inspectors. They'll come through, and they'll do an inspection, and it's their job to tell you all the things that are wrong with the home, but unfortunately, by the time they get done with their page-and-a-half-long report, you feel like, oh, my God, we can't buy this house. And it's like, that shouldn't be the case at all. I mean, they're every home is a different situation. There are so many things that can, little things that can go wrong with them that, you know, you really have to take a look to make certain that you don't have, like, a major problem or a major defect or a major, outbreak of mold or mildew spores that really are going to contaminate and affect the way you live in a house. So, it's unfortunate you had the experience you did with that inspector because that was, that's really bad. Most of these guys are pretty darn good. We've worked with a lot of them, and they'll come in for, you know, a couple 200, 300 bucks, and they know a lot of stuff. You know, they're good at what they do, and they can pick out things that we didn't notice. But you have to, when they give you the report, you have to take it with a grain of salt. And anybody that's listening and is going to be working with a house inspector, have them step through with you. What is a serious problem? What is not a serious problem? You know, what's involved with this? Should I worry? I mean, is this going to be something that's really going to give me a lot of problems, or is this a minor fix that I can do when I want to get around to it type of thing?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call, Russ. Dan in Fox Lake, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good morning, guys. Dean, my question is about dehumidifiers in a basement. I know that they are very inefficient to operate, and I'm just wondering if there is a better system out there to take care of that moisture, you know, rather than pulling that moisture through the machine and dumping it back in a drain in the floor. Is there some way to expel that moisture, you know, to the outside, or if you know of any kind of product that does that?
To be honest with you, we haven't ever run into it. With a heat recovery ventilator, you do introduce fresh air into the house, and you're pulling some of the air from the inside of the house out. But that really is not—it's not considered a dehumidification process.
No.
Obviously, by sucking some of that air out from the basement, you're getting rid of it. But the majority of the air will still be down there. So it really is about the only way to go if you want to get, you know, water out of the air in your basement. The other thing you do, obviously, is you attack the problem of the moisture. You know, why are you getting so much moisture in a basement? You know, first of all, do you have gutters on your on the perimeter of your home? Do you have good drainage going away from the house? The whole point there is you don't want to have water soaking down along your foundation, so that comes through the foundation and makes that inside air so you know, as moist as it is, you have to dehumidify it. Also, do you have groundwater underneath the foundation? Are you expelling that out of the house? Do you have drain tile running through the home? If you don't have drain tile, you might want to put drain tile in, and that may go a long way to solving the problem. So short of that, if you want to take moisture out of the house, I think the dehumidifier is really about the only way to do it.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Brenda and Frederick, it's your turn now. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Thank you. We have a house that we built about 7 years ago. It's built on a slab with in-floor heat, and we have a basement under about a quarter of the house. That's where the furnace is. We have propane heat. The house is built out of insul span. It's not a stick frame house. And so we have 6-inch thick walls, a 9-inch thick roof, and it's a vaulted ceiling. So the issue we have in the winter is we close it all up, and we have an air exchanger, but we get a lot of condensation on the windows at night. The other thing is we have window quilts on the windows that are insulated, and so those all come down at night. And so I'm trying to figure out, is there a way that we can work with the air exchanger or the window quilts or something to make less condensation? And the other thing is across all of our kids' bedrooms are on one side of the house, and those get closed up at night, but there's no vents on any of those, and that's actually where we have the worst problem with the window condensation. So do you have any suggestions?
You say there's no vents in the bedrooms?
Right.
No. Now, what do you mean, vents?
Well, there's not because it's in-floor heat, so we don't have any.
Oh, I see.
No,
yeah, you don't have ductwork, so you're not exchanging air
so
throughout the house.
When they close those doors, then there's
sure.
no air moving through.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's you've got an interesting situation there. Most people don't have full concrete walls, because one thing I could suggest, air-to-air heat exchangers, again, work very well. Again, they're not a humidification or dehumidification device. They
mm-hmm.
aren't used as such. But, you know, condensation in windows in the house in the wintertime is caused by, it's regulating humidity. And
okay.
I don't know if you have, a humidifier going at all in the home.
There's a humidistat that controls the air exchanger that's supposed to, so I've tried giving it different percentages of humidity to do the exchanging, but I don't know if that's part of the solution, or do we need to actually use a dehumidifier or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit stumped with this one, because first of all, wintertime is a period of time where things get very dry. So usually
right.
what you have to do is you have to impart humidity into a home. Otherwise, you know, your millwork and everything starts to shrink up.
Yeah, we have the opposite.
You have the opposite.
How many
yeah.
children do you have?
Three.
So there's
actually,
five of
two
you.
Two are moved out now, so we're down to one.
Okay. I just wondered in terms of the number of showers and the amount of washing and so forth that has to go on and in the house. So that's why I asked.
Yeah, and it seems that the bathroom is above the basement, and there is actually a vent that's part of the air exchanger system that's in the bathroom. So that we don't tend to have much trouble in there. The biggest trouble is really in the bedrooms. And last year, one of my kids kept his window open most of the winter, and his window really didn't have much trouble. So it made me wonder if that's
sounds like you've got a lot of moisture in your house.
Yeah. Could it possibly be partly because it's a fairly new house and that some of that will work its way out over time?
Definitely newer homes do have more moisture in them, you know, just the products when they're installed. But that levels itself out. How old did you say the house was?
7 years.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, after 7 years, you're at, you know, where you're going to be in terms of moisture in your building products. So,
okay.
So I wouldn't think that. Now, have you had a heating contractor over to take a look at the situation?
We've talked with them about it, the same guy that installed everything.
Yeah.
We've talked to him about it a couple times, but I guess we haven't called him over when we've got all the condensation sitting there to say, okay, where do we go with that?
Yeah.
So that might be a good solution.
Maybe what you might want to do is just get a second opinion.
Okay.
Because, you know, describing what you've got, you know, I think most heating contractors would still, you know, pretty much be able to grasp what's happening. But, mm-hmm. yeah, maybe grab a second opinion there. And the other thing is they do have these Hy-Vee systems where, you know, if you don't have ductwork going to these rooms, you can, you know, route through soffits or, you know, there's clever ways of kind of working them through where they're just smaller vents to get, you know, air circulating through those rooms.
Okay.
But again, it's a little bit of a puzzle in terms of where you're.
Yeah.
'Cause you have to get the moisture from somewhere, and like you said, when your son keeps his window open, it takes moisture away, because in wintertime, the air is very, very dry.
Yeah.
So.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. George in Milwaukee will give you a chance. Hi, George.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Good.
My question is, I live in a typical Milwaukee kind of craftsman-style house, which is a story and a half.
Yeah.
And do a lot of remodeling myself, and one of the projects I probably should have done first, but I'm just going to get to this fall after about 4 years here, is the attic installation. From my understanding, I think in this region of the country, you should have about R39, and in my attic, there's just probably like R16 wall insulation laid in. So my plan was to do blown in, but as with all story and a halves, my big concern is how am I going to do the crawl spaces, because that's where you get a lot of coldness on the walls, and you have the heat from the first floor coming up and causing ice dams. And at first, I was going to try and do something where you put the rafter vents through the hip walls there to get it up into the upper attic. But then I thought maybe I should just try and insulate the floor and between the rafters in the crawl space. So what's your opinion on the best way to do that?
Well, I'm trying to visualize the whole thing, but again, the main principles you want to worry about is you always put any vapor barrier on the warm side of the insulation. So make sure that when you're dealing with floor and walls and ceilings and all that type of stuff, you're always putting the vapor barrier on the right side. And then you're right on the money in terms of vents. You want to make certain that you have cool air circulating, so your outside surfaces, your outside roof, or whatever that is, if it's a sidewall or roof or whatever, I'm having a hard time visualizing it, stays cool. You have cool air that can get up through there and, hopefully exhaust out. Do you have vents where air can enter and vents where air can exhaust, or is it kind of a closed system?
Well, yeah, that's part of the problem is that again, it's, so, you have the first story, and then the second story is built inside the attic, basically, when the house is originally built and is remodeled, so you have the hip walls.
Yep.
So there's a place that's outside that hip wall where
you have a
triangle, crawl space between, you have an interior wall, the roof rafters, but then the floor that you'd be standing on there is actually the ceiling of the first floor.
Yeah.
So you got a
yeah.
lot of radiant heat coming up through there, and so it seems like you just try and cocoon that to keep instead of trying to keep it cold like you would in a conventional roof, two-story roof, would you try and keep that warm?
I think I see where you're going out. Whenever we do that, again, you're putting your vapor barrier on the inside of the house, and then I guess to use your term, cocooning, yeah, you just make sure you get a good amount of insulation in that area. And where the walls hit the roof, and between the, that 90-degree angle where the walls are hitting the floor and the floor goes out and hits the roof again, that's a large enough area that, the air kind of gets dampered down and gets kind of a medium temperature, so you don't have to worry about a lot of condensation or anything. So my approach would be is to, insulate that whole area. I know what we would do on the show. And then when you're back up on the roof again, then make sure you have roof vents that go down into that area where the wall hits the hip roof, and follow those all the way up until you're back up into your attic and you can exhaust them out toward the peak of the roof.
Oh, that makes some sense.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, George. Appreciate it. And Dean, thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to have you with us. I hope we can do it again.
Let's do it sometime.
I appreciate it. Dean Johnson, host and executive producer of the PBS Home Improvement Show, Home Time. He's, as you can tell, he knows his stuff. He's a recognized improvement expert for homes. And Home Time airs on public television stations in the Fox Valley, Eau Claire, La Crosse, Wausau, and Madison on Sunday afternoons at 4:30. And then it airs on Milwaukee's WMVT Channel 36 Saturday afternoons at 4, and again Wednesday afternoons at 4. So really happy to have him along, and hopefully we can have him back and talk with him again about indoor air, maybe some other issues as well. Coming up, though, we're going to take a look at getting outdoors. We've been indoors. Let's go outdoors and do a little canoeing and kayaking this fall. Darren Bush, our guest, coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.